The Running Rich Safety podcast is proudly sponsored by our friends at X-Miles. They're the one-stop pit stop nutrition shop for all of your nutritional needs. From Striker to Stroop Waffles, from Morton to Mountain Fuel, they've got it all down at X-Miles, and you don't even have to go to the shop. You can go onto their website, which is xmiles.co.uk, and order to your heart's content. And the best thing about X-Miles is they have this incredible build a nutrition plan feature, where basically you put in your race, you put in how far it is, how long you reckon it's going to take, how much you weigh, and it works out how many carbohydrates and calories you need before, during, and after. And you can basically add products to your list, and it will tell you exactly how many calories, carbohydrates, proteins, fats, sugars, fibres, salts, caffeines, potassium, sodiums you're getting, which makes life very fucking easy and stops you from having to read the tiny, tiny writing on the back of the packets. X-Miles have given us a discount code. It is 10%, which is actually quite a lot when you're ordering in bulk. And the best thing about this is you can do it as a kind of pick and mix. So you don't need to order 26,000 Morton gels to get free delivery. You can get basically a couple of them, a couple of Stroop waffles. I'm obsessed with Stroop waffles. A couple of bits of scratch, a couple of pH gels, whatever it is that you want to put in your bucket. Make a little delicious basket and then get it delivered free with that 10% discount, which is quite a lot when you are ordering in bulk. My cupboard currently looks like an X-Miles storeroom because I just really do like ordering things and getting loads of money off. So go to the X-Miles website, xmiles.co.uk, order what you need, put in the discount code RWSY10 for 10% off, and away you go. As you've probably realised, this podcast does contain swearing. It contains chats about mental health. It contains chats about sometimes about suicidal ideation. It's very, very honest, and it's definitely not the sort of thing you want to put on in the car during the school run. You have been warned. Let's crack on. Welcome to the Running Won't Save You podcast. It's a day of the week and it's an episode of the show. I think it's season four. I think it's episode four. Is it episode four?
Yeah, this is my second one.
It's probably episode four. It doesn't really matter what episode is it? It is, does it? Cause it's just numbers are neutral. So anyway, my name's Ali Bailey.
My name's Kirsty Reid.
Welcome to the news.
We've nailed this.
What are the headlines?
The headlines, weekend of fun running.
Oh, yeah.
Goggins.
Gogs, yeah.
And weather.
Idea for a show. Goggins box. Where David Goggins just watches other, like, Goggins-esque TV shows, like SAS, Who Cries First, and Goggins is them.
Sounds good to me.
You could also watch things like 24 Hours at A&E. And, oh, and the Yorkshire Vet.
No, better than that, I'd like to make Goggins watch stuff to make him cry.
That's what I'm saying, like Yorkshire Vet.
Okay, yeah.
Let's see what he does there when the fucking puppy comes in with a broken leg. Is he going to be like, stay hard, motherfucker? Or is he going to, one tear dropping down his face?
I wonder what would make him cry. Somebody's got to make him cry.
Pull-up bar breaking. Once I watched a video of him, he had an injury. So what would you expect a high-end endurance athlete to do when they had an injury, Kirsty?
Just run straight through it, probably double down on their training because he just needs to stay hard.
Well, he did. That's what he did. but what he did was it was his legs that were hurting.
Yeah.
So he had a leg ouchie. So he got his treadmill and he put his legs on a medicine ball and then was using his arms on the treadmill to run.
What? So like a dog?
Like a dog. So yeah, the treadmill was on and his arms on the end of the treadmill and then his legs out on a medicine ball and he was using his arms to run and he was talking to camera about staying hard. And I just thought, if his arms go, his face is going to hit the treadmill and he's going to burn all the skin off the bottom of his chin. But that didn't happen in the video, which was quite unfortunate because I think it would have been a bit of a viral sensation had that happened.
His jawbone wouldn't stay hard, would it then, if he did that?
No, his fucking jawbone
go very soft.
It would go very soft.
Did you see Steve Magnus did a Substack about Goggins?
No.
Yeah. It's called The Difference Between Tolerating Pain, Suffering, and Performance.
A study on David Goggins.
Sort of. He
Is it
said,
slagging him? Is he slagging him?
not really.
Oh.
Basically, he's saying that Goggins, that's got its place. So he's saying he's become a master at a different skill. It's not peak performance, it's not athleticism, it's survival, and it's tolerating enormous amounts of discomfort. And that's important that it can be a part of being tough. But he says there's a difference between getting good at tolerance and performance.
There is actually, isn't there?
Yeah.
How did he do at the Moab 250, old Goggins?
Don't know, actually. Do you know what he says actually in this, which I really like, is he says, like Goggins's kind of toughness is like a sort of blind tolerance sort of thing. And that's a good tool, but it's a hammer. And there's
Yeah.
like, it's like saying you use a hammer for everything. It's good, isn't
Blind
it?
tolerance.
Well, he didn't say blind tolerance. I made that up.
Yeah, but that's fucking brilliant, that term. Because there is that, it's a bit like when you get in an ice bath or something. And like, yeah, you can do the breath work for a certain amount of time, but you can't stay in an ice bath for longer than 5 minutes without really getting like, well, first off, it's actually increasingly bad for your physical health. And secondly, it gets to blind tolerance, doesn't it? Where you're just like, I just have to stay here for as long as is humanly possible, rather than accepting what you're doing and responding to it in the correct way. So at the weekend, fun, fun, fun. Do you remember that chant? What was going on?
Let's not be cleek. Don't be cliquey about it. I
What's
hate
going
that.
on when I started to sing that song?
I think we're getting blown sort of sideways up going up Blencathra.
Yeah, we were, weren't we? It was kind of 40, 45 mile an hour wind and that spiky, hard, not sleet, but not rain. And the sort of wind that chops through any waterproof layer straight to your skin. And that wasn't blind tolerance. That was responding in a way that meant we had longevity in that weather, I thought. Like we weren't just like head down, not talking to each other, keep going as fast as you can, get off the hill, get off the hill, get off the hill. It was more like, okay, this is a thing that's happening. It was a Brad thing. We're accepting what's happening. It's quite bad. And there was a point going up Blencathra when Hannah stopped. We were with the Hannah Rickman, and she was wearing 3/4 length tights, and her legs were, well, the colour of the inside of my cup. But she was fine, fine, fine. And she turned around, she looked at me, she had that look in her eye of, is one of us going to say this is a really bad idea? And I looked at her with the look in my eye of, well, I'm not going to say it's a bad idea. And then you were behind us and you were like, hello, because he's not going to say it's a bad idea either. Off we go. And it was like, it wasn't blind tolerance. It was accepting discomfort and understanding through experience that we know it's going to stop. At some point, you will turn a corner on that mountain and it will stop. And weirdly, it stopped. On top of Blencathra, to
Yeah, it
be
was
honest
weird.
with
And on
you.
top of Skiddaw the previous
Yeah,
day,
well, we
it was
stopped at
like
the
the least
fucking
windy
trig
place.
point.
I don't
We
even understand
stopped.
physics anymore.
Me neither. Oh, well, they had to start again. But yeah, I really like that difference between blind. I think because blind tolerance has a limit, doesn't it? Or does it? Is the limit death?
It's blindness. But I think we were quite good on Sunday. So it's just the three of us, wasn't it, on Sunday? And we were all quite good at just checking in with each other and checking because, like, we wanted to have fun, didn't we? And if at
Why do
any
you think I
point,
was singing the song?
but if at any point somebody had said, oh, "I feel unsafe," or "I'm just really miserable and I don't want to do that," I'd have just been fine with stopping. I mean, I would have been mildly annoyed because I wanted to do all of the Wainwrights, but all of the Northern Wainwrights, not all the Wainwrights on Sunday. That'd be weird. But yeah, I think there is that kind of blind tolerance that sometimes when you're out with a group, it is just like, oh, I'm not going to be the person to say, I think this is dangerous. I'm just gonna, yeah. It's like if they're tough, I'm tough, and we're just gonna carry on. Although I have to say, there was no point at which Rickman was not grinning.
No, there wasn't, was there?
No.
Witnessing her running full pelt down a hill with a Nutella sandwich firmly wedged in her mouth.
Yeah, she managed to eat an entire Nutella sandwich whilst dropping a five down the back of the trig.
And that is why she wins races.
Yeah, that's combining so many skills.
It is. That's doing hard things.
Yeah.
It's really, I'm quite interested in that idea about the person that says, that pulls the plug. So when you're doing something hard, being the person that pulls the plug.
Yeah.
So do you think being the person that pulls the plug, as in like the one that's like, this is, no, we shouldn't be doing this. This is why when I take groups out, I always take a mountain leader with me. So I always will take, so if I go do like the Welsh 3000s or if I do a workshop, I will always have somebody there who's more qualified than me, right? So I've got a lot of mountain experience and a lot of, what they call it, mountain sense, don't they? But I don't have a mountain leader qualification yet. But I always take somebody with a qualification out, because that way I'm not the fun captain. And that way, somebody who has a badge can make the call, right? So I wonder why that is. Is it because you don't want to not be seen as not being hard? Is it because we don't want to be seen as not fun? Is it because we're worried about people thinking we're weak or failures? Whereas actually, it takes a lot for someone to say, actually, everybody, this is really dangerous. It takes a lot of strength to say, I know you want to do this, but we can't do it. It's a bit like that book, that Annie Duke's book, Quit, where they talk about Everest, don't they? And how you have a certain amount of time, you have a window to get up Everest. And if you miss that window, it's not getting up Everest, it's the problem, it's getting back down again. You run out of oxygen. Somebody has to make that call. And when you're with a bunch of blokes who work at Chase Manhattan Bank and who've never been told no in their lives, to say to them, you can't do this, it's really dangerous, is a fucking hard thing to have to do, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. Yeah, and that's just that blind thing, that blind tolerance, that hammer. That's like, we will get to the top of Everest no matter what. But I think I tend to be the other way. I think I worry too much about that other people are not enjoying it and not having fun. And I like to check in, and if they said, "Oh, this is awful, I'm not having fun," I'd go, "Okay, let's stop then."
But
Not because I particularly want to
secretly,
stop,
on the
but
inside, you'd be fucked off, right?
yeah, I'd be like a little bit resentful. Unless, I mean, to be fair, unless it was a truly dangerous situation. But we've all got those friends who are just a bit wet.
Yeah, the ones that don't, yeah. The ones who, I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying a bit wet, but I would say this is not suited to your skill set. Like,
Yeah, and
your
that's fine,
skill
isn't
set
it?
needs to be, the only way to do that stuff is to have experience on it, isn't it? And to like sort of go a little bit further up the hill each time in the weather. Like I said to both of you at the weekend, after Dragon's Back, this no longer bothers me. Not one tiny iota, because I spent 6 hours going over fucking Cader Idris in this, and it didn't stop. It just didn't stop. And I kept thinking I'll turn the corner and it will stop, but it didn't. And it didn't stop till we got off the hill, and it was like everybody was coming off the hill like we were coming out of a war zone. Like we were all like wild-eyed and like, oh my God, it was so bad up there. And so now I've had that experience, the next thing is easier, because I'm like, well, we're out for 16 miles. This is not going to be like it was that day where it was 35 miles. And there's a nice warm car at the end of it, and I know my kit's in the car. And like knowing all that, knowing what's in my bag and knowing what I'm wearing. So even if I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting so cold, or oh my God, my legs are fucking freezing, I still know I have another layer in my bag. I still know that I can get behind a bit of wall and put on another coat. Like, it's all about experience, isn't it? But, and so it is all about experience when it's down to like, okay, actually, I don't think that this is a very good idea. We need to make a call not to do this.
Yeah, I think it's partly experience. I think it's partly building your misery muscle. And I'm a big believer you build that muscle in the same way as you build your aerobic engine or you build your leg muscles, or whatever. That the more you do it, the more you think, oh no, we've done this before, this is okay. You know, it's like threshold or interval training, isn't it? It's like the first time you do it, you think, oh, I'm gonna die. But I also think, what was I gonna say? Sorry, I've got a little bit of a cold and I'm a bit tired. Yeah, no, I also think actually it's not a terrible thing for you to have a really, really bad experience. Because I
Oh,
know,
it's
like,
such a good thing to have a bad experience.
I used to go round, like, I remember doing so many ultra races with this massive pack full of mandatory kit and thinking, oh, why do I need to take that? Why do I need to take that? And then doing one where I did the CCC where it was August and it was massive snowstorm.
Please explain what the CCC is to the
Sorry.
more newer listeners, Park Run Guy.
It's one of the UTMB races. It's like the 100, it's like 100K of the UTMB from
The kids' race.
from Courmayeur to the finish. And yeah, it's August, but the Grand Col Ferret is like the highest col, and there was just like a massive snowstorm up there. And I was like, you know, middle of August, hat, sorry, end of August, massive thick gloves on, like four layers, still really cold. But then you get down the valley and it's beautiful. It's really, really nice. But you get a just that one experience of bad weather, you never forget that kit again, or you never resent carrying all that kit again, do you? You
No,
need to have a
I
few options.
remember the first time I wore waterproof trousers was on Ultra Tour of Arran. And up until that point, I was like, I ain't fucking, this is bullshit. These are bullshit pieces of kit. And I went round this corner, and on Ultra Tour of Arran, second day, you come round a corner, and it's you come round the corner from the distillery, and you've got 9 miles of basically running along the coast. And the wind just fucking hit me in the face. It's always a headwind there. 9 miles of headwind. It must have been 40 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour, and it started to rain. And it was icy fucking wind. It was April. And I was like, I can't feel my legs. And I thought, do you know what I might do? They're wet. My legs are wet, but I might put those waterproof trousers on. And I did. And the fucking game changed. The whole day changed, like in a second, because suddenly there's a barrier between the wind and your wet legs. So you've got warm, wet legs as opposed to cold, wet legs. And I was like, now my waterproof trousers are my absolute favourite bit of kit. And at the weekend, you put yours on at the right time. And I looked at you putting yours on and I thought, I should be doing that. I've got a fucking tattoo on my arm that says "Be bothered." I was like, I couldn't see it there because I was wearing 9 coats, but I was like, I should be doing that, and I didn't. Again, I didn't, and I waited until it was too fucking late, and my legs were really fucking cold, and it took them a real while to warm up. But it was okay because I had Hannah in front of me, and I could see her calves, and I was like, hers are colder than mine, so her misery muscles are way more misery than mine.
Oh yeah, but we knew that already, didn't we?
So one point
Winter's
Kirsty went,
cold.
at one point Kirsty went, Hannah, what does it take for you to put on a pair of
Well,
waterproof
yeah,
trousers?
what is the threshold? But I mean, she was fine. Like she wasn't being stupid. She just knows her own threshold, and it's different to mine. Like mine's got worse as I got older. Interesting. Probably not going to win any favors with this, but one of our mutual friends sent me a voice note, probably sent you the same voice note, saying apparently there were a load of influencers out doing a load of filming. I don't know for what brand in the lakes at the weekend.
I didn't
And
get
then,
this voice today. Oh, this is great. Go
oh,
on.
and they were posting all these stories, like they're out on the Sunday. So it was windy and it was rainy on Sunday. I wouldn't say it was like torrential rain, but just when you were high, the rain was like really, really hard, wasn't it? Because it was
Persistent heavy.
persistent rain, yeah. And they were all in shorts, and they're all like posting these stories about how brutal the weather was and how cold they were. And then she said she looked at yours and Hannah's stories, and we were like, we're wearing coats and we're really happy and having a nice time.
We're wearing
And
kit that was made for these conditions.
yeah, but I mean, maybe that's unfair because if they were filming for a brand, maybe they were just told what they had to wear. But she just said
Maybe the
it
brand should
properly.
exercise a little bit more fucking, what's the word I'm looking for?
Safety.
Yeah, because other people are going to look at those photos and be like, oh, it's okay to wear those shorts with the fucking spewing free. It was sub zero on those mountains. The wind was making it feel sub zero. There was ice on them. There was fucking snow on Helvellyn. Like, it was like, don't wear shorts. Don't be a dick. Like, even me wearing shorts on, I wore shorts on the Saturday because it was sunny but windy, and I was absolutely fine. But I did have 8 coats on because I get cold. My trunk gets cold.
Your trunk. Are you an elephant?
Pickles here, guys.
Hey.
Hi, guys. Okay, went out and ran 20 miles on Saturday. She did. She ran
No
20 miles.
biggie.
No biggie. Oh God, Hannah looked at me and she said to me, "You're not going to wear shorts on the spine, are you?" She went, "Don't be that guy." I was like, "No, I'm not. I'm not going to wear shorts on the fucking
Somebody will,
spine."
though, won't they? Somebody will.
Yeah, somebody will one day. Anyway, it was great, wasn't it? We had a great time, and it was just great. It was soul filling. And then me and you went. I did think 6 miles into that run, I need a roast dinner. So afterwards, we went home. I went to the Fellside sauna at Ullswater and sat in a hot room, and then jumped into a freezing lake, which was, I have to say, one of the greatest experiences I've had in the Lake District, because there's nothing like jumping into a freezing lake when it's fucking hailing and windy. I felt like some sort of god. I felt like a proper witch. It was like, this is amazing. What a way to live. Like, what a
That's amazing.
fucking way to live, to be able to go and run 16 miles in that and climb up all those mountains and then jump in a hot room and then jump into a lake and be like, this is fucking awesome. I felt so good after that. Thanks for driving me there.
Whilst you were doing that, what Pickle was valeting my car.
She did such a good job, didn't she?
I took Pickle for a little walk. Pickle sits in the footwell, and I've got like rubber mats in the footwell. So I usually just hose them off after Pickle's been in my car, and but Pickle then decided to just walk all over the seats, get mud everywhere, and
What
then
did she do on that walk?
I don't even we only
Because your
walked like
seats are a fucking
yeah, and
joke.
then she shook herself, so the whole inside of my car looks like blood spatter. It's like she's murdered somebody in my car.
You know
Yeah.
that painter, Jackson Bollock?
It's
That is kind of how I leave my mark. It's a tag. She says
like
it's a tag.
a brown Jackson
It's
Pollock.
like a brown tag. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll send you the
Thanks. I think it's
bill.
going to be quite high. I actually think I've taken about 4 grand off your car. I don't know why you don't have seat covers. I guess because your dog's well behaved, sits in the boot like everybody
Yeah,
else's dog.
my dog sits in a boot where I have got a big cover in there. Yeah.
So yeah, so that's hard things tolerating. I saw that picture to my sister, and I could feel her anxiety rising as she looked at it. I could actually feel it coming out the telephone because my sister would fucking freak out if that happened. It would be the end of the world. She probably would never speak to me again. She
Oh
might have
dear.
nursed me through all my mental health ills, but the dog putting its paw prints on her fucking inside of a Tiguan or whatever it is, nah, absolutely not, absolutely not. Right, so what have we got today? We've got hard things. We've got lots of questions. What have you got?
Well, I had that Steve Magnus article, but we did that early. I've got some stuff about the cognitive miser theory.
The cognitive miser.
I've got some. Oh, something about the awkward first 30 minutes, which I really liked.
What is that, meeting people or sex or running?
I just read. I read it the other day, and it's got nothing to do with running whatsoever. But it just about how many times you give up on something because it's really hard for the first 30 minutes.
Oh.
And apparently, there's a phenomenon in dancing where people, if you're a dancer, you do a pre-dance before like a performance because you know that for the first 10 to 30 minutes you feel really awkward when you dance, so you have to kind of get into it and hit your groove. So she's saying, actually. You know, it's to say if you go to a party and try and talk to people for the first 30 minutes, you feel incredibly awkward, and all you want to do is leave, don't you? Well, I do anyway. In fact, I just carries on for the rest of
Yeah, I
the
don't actually go to the party because the
evening
awkwardness starts the minute someone invites you to the
as
party.
well. Yeah. But yeah, and another example, she says, you give up on trying to be creative and start using AI, and because yeah, I think we all do it, don't we?
This
So so.
morning, I had to, well, I didn't have to. I got to sit down and write the tagline for the book, right? And I had some really good ideas last night. But I went downstairs, put the kettle on, and was like, I could just do this on AI. I didn't do it on AI.
Yeah.
Because the other day somebody wrote something about me using ChatGPT and then got me to like fucking read through it, and it really sort of made me feel weird about the whole thing. And I'm not doing it through AI. And nothing in that book has got anything to do with fucking AI. I just want to make that very fucking clear. I'm not the hardest geezer. But allegedly. But it was a very easy, like, oh, this is really hard. Oh, God. But once you get going and start doing, you're like, oh, this is good. Oh, this is good. And then you realize they're not very good, but you are in a flow state. And I think it's the same with running. The
Exactly the
awkward
same.
first 30 minutes for me, that describes running. If I have to go do a long run, a 20 mile or whatever, the first 15 to 30 minutes are like, fucking hell, this is such a slog. Everything hurts. And then you get back into the role of it.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Yeah, she says she ends the article by saying, next time, try hanging in there to 35 minutes.
That's a
And that's
fucking
where the
good.
magic happens, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I
Pretty
mean, it's
good.
getting longer for me. It's usually about 7 miles now, which is what, an hour
Yeah,
and a half?
that's age. It takes you so much longer to warm up, I find.
Yeah, exactly. But I like that, and that's like, I'm trying to do lots of new things at the moment. So I'm going to a lot of gong baths. So the first time I went into one of those, it was like, oh my God, this is so awkward. There's loads of like people in here that I don't know. What do you do? Like, what am I supposed to do? And like, I really want to start doing a bit of yoga, but I want to go to like beginners yoga. I don't want to get to a mixed class where people are doing fucking handstands and touching their vagina with their fucking forehead because I can't do that and it'll make me feel shit. But the first 30 minutes are going to be awkward, right?
Yeah,
I guess it's like when you go to a
100%.
workshop or like a, even when you go to like a work corporate away day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Love it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Try and hang in for 35 minutes, everybody, even if that means that
Yeah.
your session is finished.
Yeah, just stay with the podcast for another 10 minutes.
Yep, 10 more minutes. You'll be okay.
It'll get, honestly, it'll get good in a minute.
And the more that you listen to it, the more your misery muscle is used. So the easier it will get. The more you'll be able to tolerate. Blind tolerance of the podcast. That's what we need.
We're like a hammer.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're more like, what would we be if we were a tool? Probably an Aldi screwdriver.
Yeah, we'd be something from the middle aisle, wouldn't we?
Would be something for middle a little. Right, what do you want to do next? Do you want to do one of your other things or do you want to do some questions?
Do some questions.
These questions are quite hard going.
Oh God. Well, I mean, I'm not the expert, am I? I mean, this is the thing.
Anyway,
I'm not
none of
a.
us are fucking experts, are we? None of us are
Do my
experts.
best. I do my
I tell you what,
best.
there's lots of people writing really nice emails about. Should we have a really nice email? Do you want a bit of feedback? A bit of a listener feedback?
Go on then.
Listener feedback. That is the jingle for listener feedback. While I open the
Did Pickle
emails.
write that jingle?
Listener feedback while you open your emails.
We could talk
Listener
about
feed.
the
I'll tell you what, we'll do listener feedback in a minute because I shut the email because I'm a fucking moron. No, you're not. You're not a moron.
It's
It's
just a hard thing, Ali.
just a hard thing. Right.
Just a hard thing.
Okay. This is from, should I say what her name is? She says it's difficult for
No,
her to write things on.
don't say the name. It's better to keep it anonymous.
Okay. This is from Anonymous. Hi, I wanted to write about what is hard to me, but I do get uncomfortable writing on the page for everyone to see. That's the Instagram page. Maybe that's hard to me, putting myself out there, but I struggle with rejection and people not accepting me. I find it hard looking at myself in the mirror sometimes, and I put all my self-worth into what I look like, and maybe if I was attractive, people would accept me as a better runner and person. It's hard trying to not think about my body and comparing to other people that run. I saw a quote once about hard things, and it said the hardest thing in life to do is change, and I believe that. I know I need to change my mindset and my approach to running. It's just hard.
Wow, so there's two things there, aren't there? There's like body image and finding running hard.
Don't even know if it's really body image,
What is it?
I find it hard looking at myself in the mirror sometimes, and I put my self-worth into what I look like. So I'm not really sure it's body image. I
Right.
think it's compare. A lot of this is comparison because she talks about because we don't know. When she says I put all my self-worth into what I look like, and then maybe if I was attractive, people would accept me as a better runner and person. But being attractive isn't really body image. It's more about you what you think is attractive, right? So it's more about like, is that body image? I don't really know what body image is.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I think we've probably all experienced this to a certain degree, haven't we? Like, I know I've stood on a start line and looked around me and thought, God, all these people look so much better than me at running. They've all got much, so much bigger legs. They're all tall.
See, you're like, they've all got so much bigger legs. Whereas a lot of my athletes are like, I'm too big. So, like, this is the really interesting thing. Do you know what the best group of runners to look at is when you're looking at, when you're thinking about the way you look or like what a runner looks like?
Park ride.
No, better.
Don't know.
Backyard Ultra.
Ah,
Barking
yeah.
Backyard Ultra. If you look at the start line of Biggs Backyard Ultra, you will see so many different types of, people like that. It's absolutely incredible. It's like there's people that like, well, there's Sarah, and then there's Harvey, and then there's Meg, and then there's like the guys from Japan who are really tiny and little, and then there's like the bigger kind of almost Goggins-esque type guys. Like Goggins does backyards. There's honestly, it's like absolutely like insane how many different types of people there are. And parkrun's a really good example, but because parkrun's only 3 miles, sorry, not only, because parkrun's 3 miles, we're looking at ultra runners, right? A lot of people that follow us talk about long distance runners, ultra runners. So a lot of my male athletes seem to believe that it's better to be smaller because that's what they're presented with in the elite. And a lot of my female runners are starting to see that actually it's better to be strong than it is to be super tiny. So yeah, you get your super tiny people, but you also get your people that look relative, in my heart, eyes, relatively normal, like Courtney DeWalter. Like I'd go as far as me, but at the moment I do feel like I look like a wrestler, but that's okay because I'm not bothered about looking like a wrestler because I'm very, very strong and I can really get up those hills now and I'm really proud of that fact. So it's really interesting because my body image, if you want to call it body image, hasn't is fine because it's not about how I look. I couldn't give a shit how I look, to be honest. I don't want to look old because I don't feel like I'm old. I feel like I'm like 28. I'm eternally 28. I'm like
Sure.
Claudia Winkleman, right?
Sure.
But so I don't want to like look like I'm old, but I don't want to be thin either. Like I want to feel super strong on a hill, and to feel super strong, I need to sort of
in inverted commas, look super strong. So sometimes I look at photos and I'm like, fucking hell, why don't I have like, why aren't my legs skinnier? Because they used to be, but I was miserable then and I wasn't, I might have been quicker, but it's nowhere near as strong. So I might have been quicker on the flat, but I was nowhere near as strong as I am now. So it doesn't bother me. I'm not really sure what I'm trying to get out here, but I'm trying to get to the bottom of this Samantha thing. And I think the reason I've asked this to you is because we've both read that You Mad at Me book. And I think a lot of this is down to that, changing that mindset of the way you think about yourself being highly conditioned from when you were a child, basically.
And it's really like you were just hinting at kind of reframing that thought, like rather than thinking, God, my legs look really big, it's, you know, my legs are really strong. I'm really like, my legs are really powerful. They're really good at getting me up the hill, rather than, you know, me standing on the start line saying my legs look so much less muscular and brown than all these like big Italian men. What I should be saying is like, you know, I'm really like, my legs are strong and they've taken me up many hills, and I'm really grateful that, you know, I'm able to do it. But yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because we're absolutely bombarded with it. I think this is probably the problem, isn't it? Is that Instagram, you're bombarded by fitness influencers who are not necessarily even runners. But you think that that's the image of the runner. But then you go to, the reason I said park run, I call it park ride because my mother-in-law always says, "Are you going to park ride this Saturday?" And it just makes me laugh. Yeah, you go to park run and you cannot predict who is going to be fast and who is going to be slow. Like if you marshal, you stand there and you just think, wow, like just it's completely different. Like, you know, sizes, age, you know, body shapes, but you know, it's just a leveler, isn't it? Because everyone's there just having fun and
Can
but
I ask you a personal question, Kirsty?
sure.
Do you like people more if they're more attractive?
I probably like them less, actually. I have a theory that really attractive people never had to develop other aspects of their personalities. They can just rely on. But I'm not being funny, but how many people have you met who are really, really attractive or just a bit boring?
Loads. Sorry, attractive people. I agree that sometimes it is the case that people who are more attractive have not had to develop a personality or to work as hard in certain ways in order to get where they want to be. Possibly, maybe, allegedly.
I'm
But
not
the
a
point is,
psychologist,
I don't
just
give a shit with people, with human beings, with runners, Samantha, with anybody. I don't really care what they look like. What I
yeah.
care about is if they share my values. They are kind, honest, show integrity, work
Yeah.
hard, fun, like supportive. Like, I really could not. I think that makes someone more attractive. That's the attraction. The attraction isn't what they look like. The attraction is what they give out, the energy they give out. That's
Yeah.
like the thing that is, you get people that are vacuums who pull all your energy away. You get people that are radiators who radiate energy back at you. Those people are the most attractive because they walk around with an
Yeah.
attractive field around them and
Also, I
they're
wouldn't go for
amazing.
a run with a really attractive person because they would really worry about probably getting muddy.
Yeah, or getting mud on, yeah, or their eyelashes coming off. We just don't
Yeah.
need that, do we? That's why I have selflessly had my makeup tattooed on my face.
But like, in all seriousness, I very much value people who will just like not get upset if they're like waist deep in a bog, or, you know, people who are just fun and laugh it off and don't take themselves too seriously and aren't all like, oh no, I've got my trainers dirty.
You mean grubs? You like grubs?
Yeah, like
Like, we love
grubby
grubs.
people.
Samantha, with this, right, with this thing, you have said that a lot of this is down to what other people think. So if I was more attractive, people would accept me as a better runner in person, right? Now, it's hard not to think about my body and comparing to other people that run. Now, the thing is, and this is for anyone that thinks this, you're not living in reality. You're living in a fucking parallel universe where you are thinking that people have the time and energy to talk about you and how shit a person you are because you don't look like a runner. That parallel universe doesn't actually exist. It doesn't fucking exist. It's in your head, and it's only in your head. Now, one of the a really good exercise to do for this, more exercises will be available in my book, 31 Days, coming out in February next year. But what a really good exercise for this is to actually look, stay in reality, and look at what the reality of the fucking situation is, right? Now, get a book and write down the evidence that you have that people don't like you or think you're a shit runner because of how you look. When have people said to you, "I don't like you because you're this," or when have people said to you, "You're a bad runner because of this"? When have they? What are the? Where's the actual evidence? When have they actually said those words to you? You might have had someone say something once, but it will only be once, right? And then you have this cognitive bias or this like thought bias, which basically leads you to that being the only option. But it's not the only option. And the other thing to do is to work it through to the nth degree, so to the end. So like, if what if people did think that you were a shit runner because of how you looked? Would they be the sort of people you want to hang around with? Would they be the sort of people that you want in your life? Would it, like, what actually happens? Nothing fucking happens because it's those people's thoughts. You can't control other people's thoughts, so there's no point in even trying. A lot of this stuff is out of your control, but what's in your control is how you're thinking about yourself. Like Kirsty just said, and I honestly think this comes with experience, and maybe it comes from having really bad experiences with your mental health or with like the way you see yourself, is you can change how you think about yourself. And it's not lying. It's like, I'm not saying, "Oh, wow, look at me. I'm so super thin," or "I'm so super ripped," because I'm not. But I am strong and I am capable of getting up hills, and I do work hard to be strong. So I might not be the best runner in the world, but I am a runner and I do enjoy running and it is my hobby. So that's enough. I don't have to be like, "Oh wow, I look amazing," or "Oh wow, look at this." Like, you don't have to do that. But this whole, like, I know I need to change my mindset and my approach to running. It's just hard. It is hard, but if you don't start changing it, nothing's going to happen at all.
Can I mention a something I read this week as well, which is sort of related to this, which is about it was about the anterior mid cingulate cortex. The
Fucking hell,
AMCC.
Kirsty, come on, it's Running Won't Save You podcast.
Hello, Gilbert.
Hello, Gibbs.
That's a part of your brain that actually gets bigger when you do things you don't like. So the examples it gives are resisting cravings, having hard conversations, learning a new skill. And every time you do it, this is a part of your brain that actually grows and helps you to do harder things. So the more you question those thoughts, of like, "Oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not. I don't look like a runner. I don't, X, Y, Z." The more you pull yourself up on them and question them, the more the easier it's going to be to do it because you're growing that part of your brain. Not again, not a scientist.
The one of the things I found really easy, one of the things I found really helpful was in The Happiness Trap, Russ Harris talks about naming the voice that says that to you. And so the voice that says to me, "You're a worthless piece of shit," is now Pickle's voice. So I imagine Pickle going, "Mummy, you are so shit. You're fat, you're ugly, you're old, you're not very good at running, you're really shit. Nobody likes you, everybody thinks you're a waste of space." And when I think about Pickle saying that to me, exactly, Kirsty, I'm just like, she wouldn't say that. She just would not say that. And saying it in that voice really helps you to separate your thought from yourself, because you are the thinker, not the thought. You're the observer of your thoughts, not the actual thought. And it's so freaking helpful. And the other thing that's really helpful is that Meg Josephson book, Are You Mad at Me? Which is about fawning and about the way you think about yourself, and is so well written that literally anybody can understand what she is talking about. So, Samantha, like, and anyone else that feels like this, you can't be saying, "I'm struggling with this, I'm struggling with that," when you're not actually doing the work. Get a copy of the book and start challenging your own thoughts. Like, seriously, start to challenge, like, how you're. Why are you standing there like that?
Finish.
You want me to finish?
No. Finish what you said. I just had to lift my
Oh.
dog onto the bed because he's not
Oh,
very well at the
okay,
moment.
right. Okay. I
And now
was
I'm
like,
covered in mud.
why? Oh, right. What's different? So the point I'm trying to make is, I'm just thinking about Gilbert now and how muddy he is.
Sorry, sorry.
So the point I'm trying to make is, if you keep going round and round, thinking that you're shit or thinking that you're fat or thinking you don't look like a runner is easy because you've thought it for fucking ages, right? You've thought it for ages, so it's comfortable. Thinking something else is always going to feel uncomfortable because it's a new way of thinking. But you have, but it's a bit like running. Like running, if you do park run every week, but you want to train to do a marathon, then doing your fir the first 3 miles of any run is going to feel comfortable. But anything more than that is going to feel uncomfortable. It doesn't mean you stop doing it because you're training your body to do it. It training your brain is the same. You have to step out of the this feels comfortable and into the this feels uncomfortable. And every morning when I wake up, I Pickle's on the bed and I say to Pickle, "You're beautiful, clever, and brave." I'm not talking to Pickle. Like I'm not
What?
talking. No, I'm not. Like I'm saying it out loud to Pickle because it helps me feel better. I can't say it to myself, but I can say it to Pickle. So things like that work. Like having like affirmations in your house works. Like my fucking desk is covered with post-it notes that are like, "This is what your purpose is. This is a helpful thing to remember. Stay in reality. Nothing is personal, permanent, or perfect. Be an example of what's possible. Reflect on how you feel rather than what's happening." All of those things are in front of me, so I can fucking train my brain to not sit in the quagmire of fucking self-flagellation, because there's no point. Running is supposed to be your fucking hobby. I've got to tell you that there is not a board of judges like X Factor judging you and being like, "Samantha's really shit at running. If she was, do you know what? If Samantha was prettier or thinner, we'd like her more." That's not happening. It's
Yep.
happening in your head. So hopefully that's helpful. The books I recommend are The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris, Are You Mad at Me by Meg Josephson, and then obviously my book, which is coming out in February.
Oh dear.
This whole podcast has been set up just so that I can promote the second book.
Well played, well played.
Thanks.
The other question we had was on a similar theme, actually, wasn't it? About
Yeah.
why is it a hard thing to accept yourself? The past couple of years I've been running well, doing strength training, noticing the difference, been happy with sports. However, I feel like I'm too big compared to other women I know who do sports. I avoid being in photos because I feel like I stand out. And I get nervous if I see someone I know in the gym. A lot of my friends are just of a slighter, more petite build than me. And while I know I'm not fat, I'm a normal size 12, can just about do a pull up. Well, bloody hell, I mean, you're already better than all of us. And
I can do two and a half.
I can't do any. And comfortably enjoy running steadily for hours. I can't stop the feeling the need to change how I look. And that's very similar, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really interesting because you know how you get all these like This Girl Can ads where you've got all sorts of different
Yeah.
women of different shapes and sizes from different walks of life. It's almost nauseating how many tick boxes they've ticked to put those women in the adverts. And it's like, well, they appear to be looking like they are really confident. And so you think, oh, I should feel like that. The other thing I want to say to you, these people, I won't say their names. It's okay to feel like this. It's okay to feel like you're too big compared to other women. It's okay to feel like you're not attractive. It's okay. Do you know why it's okay? Because we
Why?
are fucking presented. We're told it's not okay, especially as women. It's not okay to get older. It's not okay to get fatter. It's not okay to not have children. It's not okay to have children then moan about it. It's not okay to have an opinion. It's not okay. Like, we are squashed into boxes still, like, and minimized and told this is how you should look by marketing and by society. And yeah, we have a force of change, you know, with the women that we are, that especially me and you, Kirsty, surround ourselves with. And so I'm like, well, how can people feel like that anymore? Because I have the support of a group of women who are a real group of women, who. So I feel like everybody has that, you know, like has that like view of like, oh, it doesn't, there is no one way to look as a human
Yeah.
being. Everybody fucking looks different. But I've spent a really long time getting to like myself, and some days I fucking hate myself, but I do like that my body can do these things, and I don't really mind how my body looks when it's doing the things, because it's not about how I look, it's how I feel when I'm doing it. And the
Yeah.
freedom it gives me when I'm doing it, the feelings it gives me, which don't have anything to do with how it looks, but everything to do with what's going on inside it and inside my brain. And there's nothing better than being out on the hill with your friends. There's nothing better than throwing yourself into a cold lake in the middle of fucking October. There's nothing better than sitting in a hot box. Like, there's nothing better than being able to move your body, whether that's at 16-minute miles or 6-minute miles. And I've worked a lot on that, but knowing it's okay to feel like this, there's nothing wrong with you. How can you not feel like that when you're being bombarded with images of Little Women still? How can you not feel like that? Like, it's okay to feel like that, but it's not okay if it makes you feel shit. So I don't think it's about losing weight or being the same as other people, or trying to fit your body into smaller size clothes, or trying to fit your body into how you think people at the gym should look. It's about changing your view on your body, which is actually a really easy thing to do, because you need the, and it starts with gratitude, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think what you said there about community is really, really important to it, because I was just thinking, if I was dropped now into the middle of, I don't know, like Paris or something, and all of the kind of people running around running were, doing 5K really fast, running around the park,
Jean-Paul Gaultier models.
Jean-Paul Gaultier models, I would feel completely like a fish out of water. I would feel really old. I'd feel really slow. I'd be like, oh yeah, but I just basically hike up hills is what I do. And so yeah, if we haven't found our community, like I'm very lucky that I've found my community. I've got really good community of runners around me, and I live in a place where a lot of people are doing the same sort of thing as me. So I'm really lucky. But if you haven't found your community, I think that could make a big difference, couldn't it? Like
Yeah.
we've got our kind of groups. The your wonderful ex-client Marie has set up her group of women who are all, have found a lot in common, and they all really support each other through the good and the bad. So I think community does have a lot to do with it.
It does, and it's about looking. Oh God, this is so, I'm sorry, everyone. It is honestly about looking inside yourself for that self-soothing, and for that, like, get a pen out, get a journal, and write a list of things. And if you can't do it, get someone that loves you to do it, of things that, like, you can do that you are proud of. Like, even if that's just running to the end of the road, even if that's doing, like, you don't need to be doing pull-ups. Pull-ups, you don't need to do pull-ups. It's not about fucking pull-ups. Go and find something you enjoy doing and go and do that. I don't like doing pull-ups. I only do them very rarely because Oscar, another mention for Oscar, the podcast editor, has a pull-up bar outside his house, and I like to be able to go around there and do one. But he can do three with one arm, so it's, he's a 60-year-old boy. I'm not going to compare myself to him, but it's about, like, you're looking outside for external validation, and you need to look. Just turn it inwards to look at, like, what you have got, which really is a fucking functioning body that gets you out, gets you to the gym, allows you to do these things, allows you to move yourself, and to be grateful for that. It is so hard to change how you feel when you felt like that for so long, when you're being bombarded with imagery. But it's a little bit like addiction. It's a bit like, like alcohol. Like, if you want to give up alcohol, there is lots of ways that you're, like, told that it's normal, that what you're doing is normal. Everybody's doing it. Everybody gets drunk at the weekends. Everybody drinks alcohol. It's advertised everywhere. It's normal. It sponsors sporting fucking events, right? But it's not about the external image of it. It's about how you feel inside when you put it in your body. And I think, so I went out the other day. What was I doing with, oh, with pee, because I was, I had a rest day yesterday, and my legs really fucking ache from the weekend, and compacted fatigue and being very, very cold for a long time. And I was walking along with her through a field, and I was like, oh, this is fucking annoying. I've got to get back for a call. And I was like, hang on a minute, just fucking stop. Just stop. Because I was like, this is fucking annoying. My legs hurt. Why do my legs hurt? Why am I so shit? How am I going to do the spine if my legs hurt like this? Blah. And I was like, hang on, just fucking stop. Stop. Just stop. Look up at the sky, big Yorkshire sky, blue clouds. Breathe. Listen to the birds. Be fucking grateful that you can move across this field with your dog. That's it. Take 5 seconds.
Sorry.
That's it. That's just it. Like, I can help you people with this stuff if you want to need to help you. And I have written a book about it. Because you can't do it in a fucking podcast. You can't do it in 20 minutes. There's no hack. There is no hack to this work. It's like saying, oh, I'm a 5K runner and I want to run 100 miles. That's great. You can do it and we can change it. But I can't train you to do that on a podcast. And I can't train you to do that in 3 days. Like, because it takes, I think it's a 9 month to 18 month cycle for 100 miler, depending on where you're at, right? It's the same with mindset, and it's the same with changing these opinions. You're not going to read a book and get it straight away. You're not going to listen to a podcast and get it straight away. You're not going to have this 15 minutes of me and Kirsty and change it straight away. You have to do the work. It is hard fucking work. The hardest work, I think. I think it's the hardest work.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say actually is that if you turn it on its head, like we're all kind of giving ourselves a hard time saying, oh, I'm not very good at running, I'm too big, I'm too small, I'm whatever. But actually, we're like the 1% of the 1%, and like the rest of the world is looking at us going, Jesus Christ, look at these people. Like we came off Dodd on this Wainwright on Saturday,
Dodd.
and
Fuck it. It looks
okay.
little, but it's not.
We came off that on Saturday, and I'm 53, and I was with people who are 10 to 15 years younger than me,
Well,
and
thanks,
this
Kirsty, but I'm not 10 years younger than
okay, nine nine to 15 years younger than me, and this guy said, he said, you should know better at your age. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I did.
And I didn't punch him or anything, but and it didn't even make me that angry, but it's just I just find that I get that
I think he was flirting with you.
increasingly as I get older, that people are a bit like, oh, why are you still doing that? Oh, you'll ruin your knees, you know. And I hate that because I just think we should just be normalizing it. It's not, I'm not doing anything special. Like, I've got so many people around me in their 50s and 60s and 70s and sorry.
What was that?
That was Gilbert.
Was he farting?
He barked.
Oh.
To me, it's entirely normal that we're doing these things, but yeah, to the rest of the world, it's not, and we forget about that, don't we?
But I
We're
think,
already the 1% of the 1%.
but I think also we are so surrounded by noise, especially women, about how we should look. About even when we go, you're on the internet and you see videos, and everyone's got a fucking drone now, and everyone's running through the woods. It's you don't because everyone's you don't have to do it. It's like the biggest look at me party there has ever fucking been with the whole social media thing, and. It really, if you can turn it around and be like, what do I want? What's the result I want to create? Like, what are my towards moves? What are my away moves? What do I love doing? What are the things that make me feel amazing? And that might be eating fucking tiramisu in front of maths. That's okay. Just
Yeah.
because people don't put eating tiramisu in front of maths on Instagram doesn't mean that it's not fun. It is fun. There's lots of things people don't put on Instagram that are fun. Remember, Instagram is 90 seconds max. Of things that take all day. Like, I'm
Yeah.
pretty sure that if we'd made a video of all day on Sunday, nobody would watch it. But they
Yeah.
like the snippets of brutality or like the funny bits or the splashy splashy or the fun music because it's a snippet and it's a hack, isn't it? It's a hack of getting into someone's life.
Do you know what
That's not
people would
what it's
really like?
like. What?
Like one video of just all of us falling over, all the different times we fell over in the mud.
Yeah. I fell down a hole. And they didn't even stop running.
Didn't see.
Hole I've fallen down before. I thought last time I was running here, I fell down a hole. And then I fell down a hole. But you're only seeing that little tiny snippet into people's lives. You're not seeing, it's a bit like the mental healths. You know, it's months and months and months of recovery from mental health drops. It's not like I'm better now. It's not like, oh, this was. You see three Instagram posts I'll put up where I'm like, I'm just going to put an Instagram post up to keep the algorithm going so I can keep selling fucking coaching because that's all what I'm doing. And then you're like, oh, you feel better now. Yeah, I don't feel fucking better now. I feel much better than I did. But this is going on fucking ever. This is going on forever. But that's boring and people don't want to hear it. They want to hack. Do the work. Start doing the work now and keep doing the work forever because I didn't get to the point where I can be like, look at me. I look like a wrestler, but that's okay. Without doing the fucking work. Genuinely, I do not give a shit what anyone thinks about my body. That's on them.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Like, of course, in my head, I wish I looked like so and so. But do you know what? I also wish I had a pony. I don't have a pony.
Anyone
So,
listens to the podcast who doesn't hasn't seen you, they're going to think you look like Big Daddy.
I do look like Big Daddy. And I'm wearing an appy. I'm Big Daddy. Yeah. What was I going to say? Listen to this. Hi, Ali, Kirsty, and Holly. I wanted to email to say I love the podcast. And this current theme is perfect as I put my name down to run the Tunnel Ultra in March and somehow got a place. Emily, You're a fucking idiot. I put that bit in. There are so many things I anticipate will feel hard about this race. Least of all, the fact that as I've got older, I've realised I'm quite claustrophobic. So spending 55 hours in a dark tunnel will probably feel tough. But the podcast has given me great advice on remembering to control the controllables. One of the controllables being you don't have to get in the tunnel, and focus on hitting goals that bring me joy, such as smiling more, being kind, and looking out for my fellow runners as much as I can. I've also come off Strava and keep a paper notebook training log, thanks, Holly, and have deleted all social media from my phone because I realised it was having a massively detrimental effect on my mental health. Basically, I'm just emailing to blow smoke up your asses and say thanks for the pod and all the great advice. Thank you so much, Emily Plummer. She's also left her phone number on this email. Shall I read it out? Why not?
Wow.
Maybe she wants me to. That's nice, isn't it?
That's really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, like that.
I think I know Emily Plummer. I think I've met her. I think she does the Leighton 100 every year.
Emily
I think
Plummer
she's a
has
bit
got
of a
something wrong with
legend.
her. Just so people know, the tunnel is a Cobain event and it's 200 miles, I think, in a tunnel that's a mile long. Is it 200 miles or is it 100 miles?
Don't know. I've never been tunnel curious, if I'm
Me
honest.
fucking neither, because you're not allowed to listen to music and you're not allowed. It's 200 miles, yeah. You're not allowed to listen to music and you're not allowed to use. Are you allowed to use poles? Loads of rules, because the poles will tip, tap, 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 tap. And the tunnel, so you're running out a mile and running back a mile. So all you can hear, because you're not allowed to wear headphones, is the tapping of other people's feet. And obviously, it's always dark in there. So it's like extreme sensory deprivation. And it's. Yeah, and it's a Coombe Down tunnel in Bath, and so you pop out, and there's a little tiny bit of light, and then you go back in again. It's 260 fucking pounds.
But he was the original, like, very, very, very difficult ultra, like the hill and stuff like that, wasn't he, Mark
Yeah,
Cobain?
yeah. I actually know the guy that won the tunnel last year or the year before that. He's fucking nuts. So good luck at the tunnel. Have a nice time. Some people will pay for anything.
Let's not be like that about it, because
No, not at
some
all.
people, I mean, or how is that different to 24-hour running or backyard ultra? It's that same, like, mix of skills of you've got to be incredible at running, you've got to be incredibly mentally strong, and you've got to have like a boredom threshold way beyond like most people's. I think it's just a different kind of challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, I just think it's making. I mean, for me, I like one of the thing I know what I like about running, and that is seeing things. Like I love
Yeah.
the views, like, oh man, at the weekend on Saturday, what did we do on Saturday? Where did we go for on Saturday, Curtis? I can't remember.
We went. We started
Mung
in
Grizedale
Mung.
was involved.
We started over towards Bingie, place
Yep.
called Overwater, Overwater something like that, and we finished down in Keswick.
Yeah, and we did like what 12 Wainwrights,
Yeah, I
something
think
like
so.
that,
Yeah.
and it was like beautiful. Like we could stand on Meal Fell and see all the Wainwrights we were going to go and get on. And even when you stood on Skiddaw, you could see where we'd been. And it was absolutely beautiful. And then even on Sunday, when it was fucking blowing a hoolie and it was claggy as shit, and it was, you still, I still, as we were going up Blencathra, I turned around, Kirsty, and the dragon's breath was blowing over the top of the hill, like a blanket. Like it was beautiful. That's what I'd run for. I run to see those things, to smell that air, to like be in the rain and the wind, and you don't get that in the tunnel. So the tunnel isn't for me. As simple as that. It's
Yeah, that's.
not that it's too hard. I reckon that if I think hardness is, I don't think it's too hard. It's that I choose not to spend my time doing that.
Yeah,
But
and that's you don't have to.
I totally respect people that do it, like the backyard. I totally respect, have absolute respect. I know that it is a hard, hard thing to do because any 200-mile race is hard, but one in the fucking dark going up and down on the flat is really, really gross and difficult for a number of different reasons. But I guess for people that like running flat, people that run in London or people that run in don't have hills to go up, it's the hills that are the problem, right? That are hard.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah,
fucking hell,
yeah.
that's not a hard question. One more question. One more question. Hi there. I was listening to last week's podcast during 4 hours of running in peeing rain on the West Highland Way in training for a desert race, the irony of which is not lost on me. And you said you'd like questions about hard things. So here goes. Something you touched on anyway, but how do you set goals when you know you're getting older and won't get any quicker? I've run multiple marathons and ultras, but my marathon PB was set in 2013. I'm 58 now. I was 46 then. I'm mostly overdoing road races as my I'm mostly overdoing road races as my target races, and now I tend to do interesting off-road and multi-day things instead, usually with an objective of visiting somewhere new or otherwise inaccessible. But I struggle to set myself a goal for these, which makes it difficult when you're putting in the hard training miles or persuading yourself to get out of bed for a run in the rain. Don't die and finish feeling like you've done your best is generally what it boils down to, but it's not very motivational and a bit vague when in the past you've been aiming for a specific time goal or placing. And when you finish, you can be left feeling a bit flat. In bigger races or something like Parkrun, you can aim for an age group placing, but the older you get, the fewer of you there are, and many races don't even have age group results. Therefore, the question is, should I give up on quantifiable goals or focus on the experience instead? But if so, how to do that? Thanks for listening. It's actually quite helpful just to write this stuff down. Alison Gray, 50 plus marathons and ultras up to 100K, marathon PB, better, better, better. I don't care about that bit. Thanks, Alison. She's one of my new athletes.
Yes, that's the answer. Should give up on quant. No, you shouldn't give up on quantifiable goals. You should just have different goals, I think. Like, I know that it's pointless me trying to do a park run PB. Well, it's not. I mean, it's not. I could try and do a park run PB, or I could try and do a new marathon PB, but I'm no longer motivated by those sorts of things. And I feel like it would be an awful lot of effort for something I didn't really care about, that then I would probably ultimately disappoint myself. So, like, I much prefer to, like, firstly, pick a race that's really hard. Like, I go and do, like, mountain races in Europe, whatever, that I know are kind of at the edge of my abilities, and that is a really big goal for me, is being able to finish those. Pick like process goals rather than like one big like outcome goal. So my process goal at the moment is to be eating better during races, like to get a certain amount of like carbs down, so when I'm going out and doing like 2, 2.5 hour runs, and trying to just make sure that I fuel those really well, because I normally just wouldn't even bother. Well, I would bother fueling, but I wouldn't be very scientific about it. So I'm trying to do that more. Pick a goal like, there's this massive hill. I can see if I can get all the way up that hill without walking, or you could still have time goals as well, couldn't you? There's like many, many different goals. But I think once you're into kind of trail and trail ultra mountain running, etc., the time goal is very, very arbitrary anyway.
Rapid, Alison. Because I've got a lot to say on this, but I'll try and keep it brief. I've said it
No,
before.
go on, you go. You're the expert.
I'm not. Instead of like these fucking goals that are these quantifiable goals that are like, this is a weird thing to say, but like industry-wide goals, like sub four or like age placing. A lot of the time, things like age placing, you cannot control because you can't control who's going to turn up on the day. And if fucking Spinksy turns up or if fucking Wendy Dodds turns up, you're fucked, right? So there's no point in trying to put that as a goal. It's out completely out of your control, the age placing of a race, unless you know who else is going to be in that race, right? Even when you're doing trail running or you're doing multi-days and things like that, even time goals are out of your control because so much is predicted by the weather, the state of the terrain, the state of your stomach. All that stuff. There's no controllables, which is why most marathons are done on roads. The ones that are, the marathons where we have like world records and PBs are very controlled and very controlled environments. The racing that we do as ultra runners is not a controlled environment. So the stuff that you can control is absolutely minimal. I think it's about personal goals. Like Kirsty said, personal goals that you can fucking control, like your nemesis of a hill on your run. So there's two nemesis hills I've got on the Taunton 10 that I haven't ever been able to run up. In the last 6 months, I've run up them every time I've gone round the loop. And I'm like, this is a massive improvement for me. Like revisiting the Dragon's Back. 3 years of training. I just want to do better than I did before and feel different. Not, I want to, of course, I wanted to finish it, but finishing is a byproduct of being good at it or like being a better runner than I was before. And when I say better, I just mean more capable and more and stronger. So I trained for 3 years and then I went and did it. And I was grateful that I finished it. That's fucking brilliant. But all of this is personal. And if I hadn't have finished it, I still would have seen the improvement over those 3 years, right? It's all about the personal stuff that you can control. And also looking at why you're running. Are you running so that you can hit these arbitrary numbers that are industry-wide markers for goodness, or are you running for a different reason? The freedom, the feeling it gives your body, the energy that it gives you, the joy it brings you, the gratitude, the experiences, the places you visit, especially as a multi-day runner. Why are you doing it? Look at the why, look at your values, and then look at the result you want to create that is within your control. At the weekend, the result I wanted to create was I wanted to feel like me. I wanted to go and be with my friends and feel like me and not have to mask or not have to pretend and not have to like be someone that I wasn't. And I went and I did that and I ran at my pace with my dog, with my friends, doing the things I wanted to do, getting views, taking photos, being fucking grateful. And that achieved every goal that I've ever set myself for running. Like that I do nowadays. I don't go in to win stuff. I don't go into podium. I go in to do the best job I can do for myself based on a set of results I want to create that I can control. And I think that that thing, control what you can control. If you can do that and do it with joy and freedom and not fear and constriction, your results, in inverted commas, will be better because you will fucking enjoy every second of it instead of hating it or stressing yourself out and using that energy to stress yourself out about time or about how other people perceive your performance. Your results will be better because results are a byproduct of doing something you love in a way you want to do it, right? Am I right?
Is that a question for me?
She just went up, Kirsty just went for a poo, made a coffee,
Oh, I
made
didn't.
a
I just.
full dinner for eight people, which is now in the slow cooker, and then
Yeah, I was.
came back.
I was just. No, I was just sitting here li listening. No. I think it. I think a lot of it just comes down to like I feel the older I get, it's more. I'm much more zoned in on what I actually really, really want to do. What makes me happy. What rate, like, it doesn't even have to be races, does it? Like, give me a weekend of doing all the Northern Wainwrights over any race in existence, even park rides, even Falfort park
I
ride.
have more fun doing that than I have in most ra than I have doing most races.
Yeah, so like that's number one for me, is like, what races do I actually want to do? And then it has to be ones I really, 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 really want to do. I'm not going to tick any boxes anymore. So like maybe. Like, and that might be road marathons and it might be 5Ks or whatever, but if they're the things you really want to do, then you can totally commit to them and you can still do your best and have goals, you know, that just aren't the, you know, you can, you will never be the athlete you were when you were 35 or whatever
Which is
again, so you have
fucking
to have
brilliant because
different.
you're a better athlete now because you've got all that experience.
Yeah.
It's about how you look at it, isn't it? You might not be as
Yeah.
quick as you were then, but you are more experienced and you have more behind you and you have a better endurance base from which to like spring off from.
Yeah, it is hard though. I'll be honest. I think it is hard, like, to not compare yourself as you get older. So, good luck.
We're all getting older, everybody. We're all getting older.
But we'll never be as young as we are today.
Correctamundo. Control what you can control. Okay, that's it for this week. Thanks, Kirsty Reid, for your extremely fun and informative. Oh, that was going to be a really good sentence. You know when someone does give something, what's that called?
Input.
That's it, input. We'll be back with the same again next week with a super special co-presenter because Holly doesn't like me anymore and she doesn't want to do the podcast. That's not true. She's actually just away for a week. Who will that
Sure.
co-presenter be? Will it be, who will it be?
I think it's either going to be the hardest geezer or what's his name?
Goggs,
Goggins.
Gogglogs,
Goggins.
Baby Goggins.
God, this is right up Goggins Street. He'd love to come on here and talk about process goals.
Oh my God, he'd love to talk about the result he
He
wanted to create that was completely within his control, wouldn't he? He'd love that.
would.
He'd
He'd
love
like. He'd like. To, he'd talk about toxic goals.
toxic gratitude. Toxic gratitude with David Goggins. Okay, I'm going to go and eat some porridge and then go and do this fucking workout that Holly's given me, which is 12 times four, no, 12, yeah, 12 times 400 meters.
Good luck. I'm gonna be doing an hour easy later.
Oh, I don't want to go, and then I have to go to the gym. But there is a sauna at the gym, so I can indulge in my hot room. Okay, I love you. I'll see you soon, Kirsty. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Running Won't Save You podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, would you mind nipping to Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your pods, and just leaving us a review, but also hitting that subscribe button? God, I hate saying that, but it really does help
us with our numbers, and that helps us to attract better sponsors, and that means that we can do this more often. So if you can do that, we will be very grateful. We are on Instagram. It's at Running Won't Save You Pod. And just a quick shout out to some people who I personally support and would love for you guys to check out as well. They are the Green Runners. You can join the Green Runners, get yourself a patch and feel very smug. Pair Ups, who will fix shoes. They send you shoe fixing kits. Look them up on Instagram. Pre-Loved Sports, don't buy a new kit. You don't need it. The most sustainable kit you've got is the kit you're already wearing. So head to Pre-Loved Sports website and you'll be able to buy amazing kits super cheap. I bought a Montane Gecko vest the other week for like £30 and I wore it for the Dragon's Back. It was incredible. Into Ultra are a charity who work to make ultra running available to everybody, helping pay for coaching, helping pay for physio, helping pay for race entries. So go over and see what they're doing, see if you can help, see if you can donate. And finally, Reaction Collective, who are an incredible group of people who fix kit, who can recycle kit, and who generally have loads of information about how you can be a bit more of a sustainable runner. We will see you next week.